Code Monkey, get up, get coffee. Code Monkey, go to job. Code Monkey, have boring meeting with boring manager Rob. Rob say Code Monkey, very diligent, but his output stink. His code not functional or elegant. What do Code Monkey think?
Welcome to From Python Import Podcast. I am Chris Miller, and I am here with Mike Pernot.
Hello.
I always mispronounce your last name. Am I doing it wrong?
I don't know.
I'm doing it
what
wrong.
Did you say?
I just said Pernot, or is it Pernot?
It's Pernot.
It's Pernot.
The emphasis is on the first syllable.
I always do it backwards.
That's
I don't know
okay.
what that is. It's the French thing.
Yeah.
It must be. So, anyway, we are here. We are currently sitting not poolside, though
not
the interview
poolside.
We have for you is poolside at PyCon with Katie Cunningham.
The esteemed Katie Cunningham.
The esteemed Katie Cunningham, who I have to say has become one of my favorite people that I met at PyCon. And it's the Twitter conversations we've had since then.
Yeah, Twitter has been really entertaining, and had some fun time talking with her at a couple of parties and things. Mostly about My Little Pony, of all things.
But, hey, you know, whatever it takes,
it's
right?
Yeah, good times.
So if you're not following Katie, you should, and we will have a link to her Twitter in the show notes, along with links to her website and other relevant information.
Yeah, she's been pumping out a lot of the Pygame tutorials over the past few weeks, and it's been real exciting to see how that's developed since we last got a chance to talk to her in person.
Well, one of the things that I really liked talking to her about was, frankly, her website. You know, she did a talk, Noob Talking to Noobs, about hosting in the cloud and what she does with her website, but, you know, she hosts a website with a blog and all the usual accoutrements without any strong backend besides Django, which is pretty cool. I mean, I'm using, you know, WordPress for mine. We're using Blogify now for the FPIP site.
Oh, is that live now?
Yes, we are officially on Blogify, thanks to Mike Crute, who could not join us here this evening because we didn't tell him. So
he's busy running Cluppy tonight.
That's right. He and Dave are at Cluppy tonight. So
why are we at Cluppy?
Well, because I have the kids tonight.
Oh, yeah.
And so I can't go down to the boat.
And I'm being a loser and not going to that very often.
Well, we're both being losers. So
go out and go to your user groups, kids.
So from a couple of big losers, we switched to a big winner, Katie Cunningham, in our interview with her at PyCon 2012.
Woo-hoo. Ladies and gentlemen. I don't know what this world is coming to.
Yes, the rhythm, the oh. Oh, I appear to have left a kettle on and work there, but I'll be back for that.
We are here with Katie Cunningham. It's me and Mike Pernot.
Poolside
at PyCon 2012.
Fresh Katie, air, sunshine, palm trees.
So, Katie, thank you for joining us.
Oh, thank you for having me.
And I was there for your Noobs Talking to Noobs talk today about getting a website going up in the cloud and everything, and that was pretty awesome.
Thank you.
You're a Django developer.
Yes.
And so that's how you come to do all your own stuff up in the cloud.
Absolutely. It actually was a moment of panic. I had gotten business cards printed, and it had my website address, and I was going to a conference, and I didn't have a website yet. So I needed to set up a server in a hurry, and I managed to get something up, so it wasn't too embarrassing. I cratered the site when I came back and tried to do something new, and it wasn't up for 3 months. Because I didn't have time to figure out what had went wrong, and it was just really horrible. And that's when I really started getting into Fabric and automating everything. So I started really, you know, working at, you know, I never want to touch the server ever, ever again. I never log in. The only time I log in is when I want to look to see if something is going on or if a file is really there, or I want to check, you know, the structure of my server. That's the only time.
Okay.
And I've actually been pretty good. I haven't done anything. I haven't logged in and changed anything in about a year now.
Wow.
So
that's pretty impressive.
Nice. Yeah.
Now, what your personal website, are you running that off of? Is that Homeworld Django blog?
That is. Oh. It was actually, I need to blog about that, but it was proof. Somebody came to me a while ago, and they posted on there, I want to do a Django CMS. I want to use one. And there's Fine CMS and there's Django CMS and there's this other, you know, which one should I use? They all seem really complicated. I asked him, I said, well, how many pages do you have in your CMS? 5. Well, what about flat pages? Mm-hmm. Dude, I forgot they even exist. I forgot they existed. And he went and did it flat pages. So I was going to do the website as a proof that you can do great things with very few apps. I've gone beyond that. Now I use Nathan Borer's Django Basic apps.
Okay.
Which is a great tool set. And I need to find him and, like, you know, beat him up to get his stuff into PyPy. Because I love it, but I hate not being able to pip install it.
Sure.
Like the other apps.
Yeah, if it's not pip installable or easy installable, does it exist?
Yeah.
It's hard.
That is pretty tough.
You know, and if he doesn't want to keep it maintained, I'm happy to maintain it for him. Because I use everything in there. I started using it when I wanted a blog, and I wanted a simple blog.
I'm not familiar with that tool set. What is that?
It's a set of little tools that are... it does things like it does a blog.
Okay.
It has media management. It has extensions on comments.
Really?
It has tagging. Yeah. It's just a lot of little tiny apps that everybody always needs to use when they're setting up a site.
That sounds really cool.
It is. It's really cool. I really enjoy it.
Because I think we've played the most, just speaking about, you know, Python and blogging, with Blogophile. Mike got turned on to Blogophile, which, you know, pumps out flat pages and everything like that.
I'd thought about doing the Jekyll thing, because all the cool kids were going to static pages and Jekyll, and I'd heard Gary say things about how it aired silently and weirdly, and I didn't like that, and I thought I might have to write my own, and then I found Blogophile just in time.
Mm-hmm. And I'm a firm believer every developer needs to have dealt with a blog at some point and the code in it, because it's really more painful than you think.
Yeah.
It really is. And just with the stuff that you did for... Mike recently speared an open source project for our company Hack Day for a blog, team management, wiki,
voting,
menu options, that kind of thing. And... it's never as easy as it looks.
No, it isn't. And doing stuff like... and that's why I appreciated when it came along. And it is very basic, so it doesn't really give you a whole lot to work with.
That's fine. I prefer not having a whole lot to work with.
Yes, and it's... and my first thought was, it's a blog. I want to show things in sequence or on their own and some comments. That's really all I want.
Yeah.
But it is a cool project. I need to track him down if he's at this conference. I'm not sure if he is.
I
owe him a beer.
I have to say, went to your website and love it because it doesn't look like a WordPress site.
No, it doesn't.
I mean, this is one that, you know, Mike is quick to rip me about, because I went to Blogophile, then went straight back to WordPress because I do podcasting and, you know, all that kind of stuff. But we're starting to, I mean, one of our co-hosts, Mike Crute, is talking about writing an extension to Blogophile that will put the enclosure tags in for that kind of thing. So, I take your point about doing it yourself, though, especially if you're a developer.
And I did the CSS and everything myself, and the design.
Yeah.
I'm a big believer in... I actually did a blog post a while ago, and it's probably my second most reshared post. It's very weird. I wrote a faking design post. I am partially colorblind.
Okay.
So I can't do colors very well. I am an artist, but that doesn't make me a designer. They're very different fields. I take things that are three-dimensional and make them, you know, flat. I don't coordinate colors or anything. I walk into room stores, I'm like, this looks like it matches. Sure, let's just get this room. And that's what I do. And I had posted a bunch of things that said, here is a way you can come up with color schemes that don't suck. Here are ways you can come up with, you know... patterns and, you know, tiled patterns that look really nice and...
That's that post.
Yes.
Okay. I have clicked through to that. I have seen it.
It's my second most. My first most is my home office setup.
Uh-huh.
I don't know why. I'm like, I went to IKEA and spent a grand. This is apparently fascinating for people.
The things people latch onto. I will write a post that I think is going to be instant gold and it doesn't go anywhere. And then I write something... God, I wrote something about what was it? Info Suicide. It was the...
Oh, yeah, when...
It was when...
Mark Pilgrim.
When Mark Pilgrim vanished. And all of a sudden, that went everywhere. And it's like, but I was just being opinionated. I don't get it.
Well, opinions so, on the internet.
Someone out there is wrong, and or thinks I am, and is willing to tell me.
Well, my theory is, with those two being my top ones, geeks don't know how to organize an office, and they don't know how to, like, match colors.
Mm-hmm.
So, obviously, those are the two things they need the most.
Oh, yes. Absolutely. So... You've got a couple of projects going on right now. You've got your Rogue project, your Pi Game experiment. Tell us a little about that.
I decided when I... Richard Jones and I both nearly submitted the same thing. I wanted to do a talk about gaming, like game design,
mm-hmm.
because I had a friend a long time ago. She would complain that the people would come to her. She was actually... She taught classes at the master level for game design. And people would come in, and they're like, oh, I'm going to make games. She's like, great, what games do you play? Oh, I don't play games. I'm just going to make them and make a lot of money. This was, or I only play first-person shooters, so I guess I'm going to do a first-person shooter. And she would not let them in the program.
Mm-hmm.
She would complain about it. And I'm like, yeah, you know, people don't understand. There's a lot more to gaming. There's a lot of design elements that are very, you know, intricate. So, I would really love to do a talk on this. He does tutorials on Pygame.
Mm-hmm.
So, one day we Skyped, and we discussed it. I was like, this would be a really cool tutorial. I open, you know, with design, which warms up the crowd, and it gets them thinking about games more deeply. Mm-hmm. And then he goes and shows the technical aspects. He's like, you know that mechanics thing Katie was talking about? These are the mechanics. This is where they went. You know, we see them right here. Yes, that's the highfalutin theory. They went here.
Very cool.
You know, here's how, you know how she talks about separating the world and the mechanics? Here's where that happened. And it was a lot of fun. Well, I realized a few months ago, I guess, I had to kind of learn Pygame if I was going to stick around the rest of the tutorial and help people.
Mm-hmm.
So I love roguelikes. And I decided if anybody wants to make a game, the number one thing you should do is take a game you know and copy it.
Yeah.
Pixel for pixel. You know, just copy it. Then it gives you all this insight to the nuances.
Mm-hmm.
For instance, I did combat. I'm working on combat right now, and my little rogue guy was going and he was smacking something, and it smacks him back, and that ends the turn. Well, I forgot to check that everyone was still alive when they were hitting. So my guy would kill the thing, and then it would hit him back. I'm like, well, that's not fair. And so you have to really think about combat rounds. So I'm like, but wait a minute, can it flee? So I started thinking, okay, should it flee? How would I do that? That kind of thing. What was it? Yeah. And it really turned into a very popular article. Like, I actually got an alert from Google Analytics saying, you're getting a lot of hits. I'm like, what? Reddit? What's on Reddit on my site? And I went on Reddit, and it was my Pygame.
Wow.
And people have really, like, responded to it and have said, you know, gee, I could write about security, or be like, oh, thanks. I read about a stupid roguelike that doesn't even work. This is the best thing ever. I'm going to go write this. And they're branching my rogue.
Wow.
Oh, that's cool.
Like, I'm like, this is disposable code. Because another thing you need to do is learn to throw away code quickly.
Mm-hmm.
We have a tendency to want to keep and fix code. No, just finish the game, make it functional, or get to a point where you realize you cannot make it functional and throw everything away and start over again.
Mm-hmm.
You will have a much better game if you learn to throw away your code, because there's so many subtle, weird things. Like, I animated my guy, because at first he was jumping.
Mm-hmm.
And then I said I wanted him to animate and glide to the next block, and the entire game looked wrong. One of my favorite quotes about game design, there was Yahtzee was reviewing two different shooters. He said, the guns felt clunky in X versus, you know, compared to Y. And my first thought was, how? You are pressing the same button. Those buttons are universal. You are pressing X to shoot, Y to reload, shoulder to switch. It's the same buttons, but it was things like, you know, how quickly the hands moved, the heft of the machine, the heft of the thing, the sound.
The apparent heft, yeah.
Yeah, the apparent heft. The sound, if there was a reverb.
Mm.
to, you know, not even just one you would feel, because that's kind of gimmicky, but the hands.
Right.
Showing that they had, you know, moved.
Yeah.
Because they
show some recoil,
yeah.
Show some, yeah.
Show recoil. And it's like, wow, that was actually really intricate and very subtle. So that's how that got started.
That is pretty cool. I went back and I was reading through some of the old posts, and it's just... Pie game has always been one of those things that's been on the list of, boy, you know, I should really try that someday. When I have an idea, by God, I'm going to sit down. And
have you ever done the Pie Game Week or Pie Week?
No, and I'm not sure if I'm going to do the upcoming one because it's very badly timed. I have a book I'm writing, and it's very badly timed for my deadline.
Yeah.
But it's twice a year. So I promised him if I don't do this one, I will do the next one.
I really appreciate what you're saying, though, about rebuilding something pixel for pixel. A couple of years ago, I was learning... the Inform 7 language, the one that they use for Z machines, for Zork and things like that. And I sat down and started rewriting Zork from ground up, because those are my favorite kind of games. And learning to think through those problems was really educational, because there are things you take for granted.
Yeah.
How do you know that the person has that in their inventory? What does it look like? How does it, you know, it's the little gotchas.
Yeah, I actually have a thing I need to return to once I'm done with this. I was writing a framework for writing text adventures in Python called 10x10.
Oh, nice.
And the idea is that it'll build little 10x10 rooms. You as a developer can log in. You run the game, and you just start saying, okay, put a room to the north, put this object in it, put a trigger event in it, here's the description of the room. And you can build it, you know, by going around and building this, and then turn around, and then you can have somebody play it.
Sounds a lot like the frameworks that they used to use in the old MUDs and the MUSHes, yeah. You know, that kind of, you go in, I did MUSHes, you did MUDs.
Yeah, it does feel very
okay,
like the MUSH.
So you know.
It feels like a lot like the MUSH and the Moo construction.
Right, but that's very cool. To have a framework to do that, it would be really interesting. It's, you know, mm-hmm.
And
this is relevant to my interests. Please sign me up for your newsletter.
And then you can convert it. Like, I actually had... that I was like, okay, here's the back end to it, but the front end, there was a graphical, you know, there was a non-graphical just text interface, there was a curses interface. I was working on an HTML interface that would use, like, HTML5 and do, like, smooth transitions.
Mm-hmm.
And you could actually populate the view with images and objects and, you know, make it pretty and change it. And so it's really, you know, I was starting to get there, but life
of course.
Happens.
Yeah. I was about to say, how the heck did you get that far?
Yeah.
I'm pretty impressed.
I used to have an hour in, hour out train ride every day to D.C., and I coded on those. Now I don't. My commute is come downstairs, turn on the computer, and I actually miss my hour commute. Even though I don't miss an office, I miss having the hour of thinking time and coding time.
Mm-hmm.
So
I went through something similar. I was doing an hour commute there and back again, and then started working for a company out in California and just went, hey, roll out of bed and start working. And, you know, that home office thing is a lot trickier than anybody expects. Everyone thinks it's going to be great to work from home, but the transition time you lose and, you know, the downtime.
I had to retrain my family. Because now that they knew I was home, they'd call me during work hours and want to talk. And I finally had to train my mother, call me at lunchtime.
Yep.
I will make time to talk to you. Do not call me any other time.
I had that. It's especially bad when you've got a spouse that's at home during that period.
Yeah.
Just because it's so simple. They're there. You know, you're there. Mm-hmm. So it seems like you should be able to interact. And sometimes you'd really prefer that to working.
My fiancé got his hours switched, and it drove me insane.
Mm-hmm.
He got his hours switched, and he was working later. So he was sitting there playing The Sims, playing Let's Plays on YouTube, and he'd come over and talk to me, and I'm trying to code. And I would give him apparently these looks of death that he expected me to stab him with, like, one of my many office implements.
Mm-hmm.
Because my office is not enclosed. It's the only fault of my office. And it's actually, it's a feature.
Uh-huh.
Because when my kids are home, I really can't afford to close a door.
Right.
And let them go run riot. Because my son becomes power greedy.
Okay.
If I say, you're in charge of Hannah, he's like, so that means I make all the rules.
Oh, boy, I've got one of those.
Yeah. So I can't really leave them alone. They have to be within sight of me, but, you know, or at least where I can hear them doing stuff.
This looks like it's yours.
Ooh,
yes.
Pizza.
You got it, sir.
Thank you. That's a good mom.
Club sandwich.
That's me.
Thank you.
Supposed to be for you.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Mm-hmm.
welcome.
Is there anything else I can get for you guys?
No.
Salt and pepper?
Good.
Well,
malt vinegar?
Actually, yes, that would be wonderful.
You got it.
Thank you.
Right. Check and make sure we're still recording here. I've never used the iPhone for this. I think I'm going to... Will this keep going, Mike?
It will keep going.
Okay, I cleared all my music off of it, so we should have gigs and gigs and gigs
of
space.
It ends up writing it compressed to M4A when it's done.
Okay, I can deal with that.
Yeah, it's pretty easy peasy.
I normally have this whole setup of microphones and all this, but who wants to go to a convention with that nonsense?
We did last year.
Oh,
MI Techie.
Yeah, that's true.
Local cast. Mm-hmm. Had all his gear, and we actually had like a nice setup for PyCon reminiscing. But,
there was one guy that there was one guy that had this whole setup, and it was hilarious, but it was a bad idea because then we fed them whiskey, and then we brought out the equipment, and then we convinced them to post it before editing.
Ha ha!
Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Enjoy, guys.
What could possibly go wrong?
Yeah, and he's like, "You did that. I hate you."
That's what I was telling one of our compatriots earlier. Just because we record it doesn't mean it has to go up. So how did you get started with Python? How did you get started in Django? What brought you to this place?
My background was actually in psychology. I was working an absolute crap job as a secretary, basically. You know, but I was the admin who also managed their website and their databases and all that.
Tech support. Office manager, right.
Basically, and actually a locksmith gave me the best quote. He's like, "So let me guess, you have many hats and they pay you for the one that's the cheapest." I'm like, yes,
that's
beautiful.
That is
exactly.
That's so perfect.
Yeah. I'm like, yeah, that's exactly what my job is. So through a mutual friend, I got to work at NASA. He introduced me, got me in there. And I was actually a requirements analyst.
Okay.
But they discovered that I actually could program, because I had programmed before. I'd done PHP. I had played around. And so I started doing clone work and doing Python work. And that's kind of how I fell into it. And over the next 4 years, I went from being, Katie occasionally codes, to Katie's a full-time developer.
Does it surprise you that you wound up here?
Initially, my major had been special education and computer science. Because my idea was I was going to make appliances and websites and things that were easier for disabled children to use. I ended up getting out of the out of special education when my son was diagnosed with Asperger's. Actually, at the time, it was autism. He's upgraded. to Asperger's since he got older.
Wow.
And I just had this moment, this realization, I can't do this all day and then come home and then do it all night.
Yeah.
So I decided to go a completely different route.
That makes a lot of sense. I don't know very many people who could do that constantly.
Yeah.
So, how many PyCons have you been to at this point?
Oh, God.
Where'd you start?
I panicked when they asked me this, because I'm really bad at years.
Mm-hmm.
I have to ask my children when they were born, when I fill out forms. Were you born again? Mom! Like, I know the day. When was the year? Yeah.
My wife and I were married in 2000, simply because it was a zero-based year, and it was easy to count.
Oh.
So we can just do quick math, subtract 2000, and we know which thing we're supposed to get, or what the official... year is.
Yeah, I could see that. But yeah, with, I think it was 2008, my first conference was Clone Conference. Then I went to PyCon, went to DjangoCon. I've been to, I think, three. I've been to one in Chicago, one in Atlanta. I did not go to two in Atlanta. I only went to one in Atlanta. And
I was at that one, too, the 2010?
Yeah, I think this is my third one. But I was going through a divorce, and they're spendy.
Yeah.
So you can't afford to, like, go to a conference.
when did you start presenting?
My very first conference.
Really?
Dove
in with both feet.
Well, see, I'm in psychology. We had to present for every class. If you know, if not once, multiple times. Mm-hmm. Because the idea was you cannot be a wallflower and be in psychology. Mm-hmm. You have to be able to get up and speak. You have to be able to defend yourself. You know, right. It's just part of it. So writing and social speaking are very core elements of a psychology degree, at least where I went.
Mm-hmm.
So for me, standing up in front of, you know, 40 people, not an issue. I could do it, you know, cows come home. So I actually gave a case study on NASA Science, which was a NASA site that we converted from a bunch of HTML pages to a clone site.
Okay.
And I did an usability, how to do usability testing from the poor to the rich, depending on how much money you had.
Mm-hmm.
So...
We can't both be chewing at the same time, Mike.
I know. We'll edit this out in post.
Exactly. We'll take care of it.
Tell me about that accessibility study with the income spectrum. That seems really interesting. What did you find? What was the... He asked while, unfortunately, in mid-bite.
It isn't about how rich the user is. Mm. It's about how rich you are. Doing usability... is like usability studies can be extremely expensive.
Mm-hmm. I bet.
You can drop millions if you really want to, and some companies do. However, there are cheap ways to do it, like card sorting. You take a bunch of cards, and you have a website, and on each card you write a concrete thing on that website, a blog post about different kinds of guitar strings, review of, you know, this new pedal. You know, you have all of these different things, and you make these concrete objects. Then you go to a bunch of people. You go to novices, you go to experts in the subject matter, you go to intermediates, and you say, take these cards, and I want you to put them in piles that seem to relate to each other. And they do. And, okay, give each pile a title. And then you put this in a spreadsheet, and then you start to look and see, look for a pattern. And you see if the same titles keep coming up. If they do, congratulations, you have now structured your website.
That's awesome.
It is a really cheap, it's a stack of index cards, and you can do, like, to prove my point, when I was at the Pwn conference, I had a stack of index cards, and I brought them, and they had all of the content on our site, and mm-hmm. I did this probably 30 times.
Mm-hmm.
In between sessions, and everybody wanted to do it, and then I went up and actually posted the results. And I said, here are the results I got. I want to show you my website now. And I showed it to you, and I said, look, it's the same categories. Look at how cool that is. You know, we did this with a lot of people, and it was so consistent over everybody. So, and then we had more expensive, like, eye tracking stuff.
Right,
right.
And when would you need eye tracking? Why would you use eye tracking? Which, actually, that's gotten cheaper now because of every computer.
Mm-hmm.
How is everything here?
It is great. Thank you.
Good. Would you like some another drink or glass of water?
How about just a glass of water for
sure.
me?
Sure. I think probably from a timing standpoint, we should get the check.
Yes, we do need the check as well. Meeting. Yes, we do.
Would anyone else like some water also?
A glass of water would be great, thanks.
Okay.
I'm sorry, when are we? I don't know what time it is.
It is 5:24.
Okay, cool.
We just know how long it takes. But yes, there's a lot of usability things you can do that are both, you know, there's a lot of cheap ones, there's a lot of expensive ones, but you should mm-hmm. know which one you want to use when. And I think that's another talk I might revive and bring back to a conference, because...
That would be really interesting.
I think that would go over well.
That's my most heavily attended talk.
I believe it. Well, yeah. It's something that I think a lot of developers hear about usability, but don't really know what it means. Mm-hmm. It's just a word, you know.
Yeah.
Right.
I know I've run into that just at our companies. You know, we have a group of usability experts, and I have no idea what they actually do.
If you ask most developers, they say, pretty bugs.
Mm-hmm.
You know, white space. They don't know what it means.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they don't know what the result is, why something is more usable.
Right.
You know, and that... I mean, there's this one guy who was complaining, I think a Unity guy. He's like, people need to be more specific about why they don't like something. And I was like, as somebody who studied usability, I'd like mm-hmm. to tell you that I studied for years to get the vocabulary mm-hmm. to dissect why I didn't like something.
Oh, yeah.
The average citizen does not have that vocabulary. They just don't.
Well, that's when it falls to the professional to educate themselves to be able to interpret,
mm-hmm.
you know. I could tell them why I don't like Unity, but...
Well, I think it's fascinating that you use those words, because they're very similar words that my wife and I use about wine.
Mm-hmm.
And about needing the vocabulary to understand why you like something or why you don't like something, mm-hmm. and the empowerment that you can have once you do have that vocabulary. And so maybe more developers need to get that in some way.
I think so. This has been an ongoing conversation at the company we work at. We have web developers and we have web producers.
Uh-huh.
And web producers are, you know, the folks who do a lot of the front-end work, the JavaScript, that kind of thing, but they live in a slightly different world. And, you know, the opinion that several of us are coming to is that division's an illusion.
Yeah.
You know, everybody should be able to understand, at least at a basic level, mm-hmm. what's going on in all areas. And I think that usability could be folded in there as well.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, a lot of folks don't want to do it. They want to stay at the command line and do their thing. Okay, that's fine, be a mushroom.
Uh-huh.
But it seems to me that if you're going to move forward, and especially as things get easier to do with user interfaces,
mm-hmm.
knowing how to do them right is really important. So what's been your biggest takeaway so far? It's the first day of the conference, so it's kind of hard to say. But
I am never, ever submitting three things to a conference ever again. I submitted a poster, mm-hmm. I submitted a talk, and I submitted a tutorial, and all three were accepted.
Wow. Yeah. Nice.
That was I only expected one. Yeah, I only expected actually one. The 508 poster was a shoo-in. You know, because you can't say no to blind people.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And I thought that, you know, the other two would be canned, and they weren't. Mm-hmm. One almost, my noobs talk almost didn't make it in, but it made it through the second cut.
Sure.
So I was just, you know, I went to the hair stylist and was getting my hair cut, and she's like, you want to get some color? And I'm like, yeah, no, I have a little gray. She's like, we need to talk about your use of the word little. And she showed me in the mirror. I'm like, oh, my God, I didn't realize I had that much gray. Because you don't see the back of your head.
Right.
And my fiancé doesn't care, so he wouldn't tell me.
Right, of course.
And she's like, maybe you want to put some color on before you go. So
there you go.
But, yeah, that's what it did to me. And I'm like, did I have this gray 4 months ago? No, I would have had you color your hair.
Wow.
4 months ago.
Well, congratulations on the achievement unlocked. Of one of each category.
That's yep.
pretty cool.
That is awesome.
I think exactly one person who has fulfilled that or unlocked that.
That is pretty impressive.
I have that badge. I'm never doing it again.
I was actually relieved not to have any of my proposals accepted this year.
Mm-hmm.
I had just been through very, very busy at work through the fall. Had to get a talk ready for CodeMash in early January. So put that together largely at the last minute. And then very busy January, February. So...
Well, you've been trying to get me up there for a little while now. I think I've come up with something for next year, though. So.
Oh, good.
Are you guys going to DjangoCon by any chance? I mean, you're Python shops.
Unfortunately, no, I don't think so. I don't know that we could get, frankly, the corporate backing to do it. And then there's the personal time part of it.
Right.
When is it this year? Is it?
It's always over Labor Day.
Okay. I have
because
the World Science Fiction Convention that weekend. So.
Because I actually had a told... My work, I'm like, yeah, I'm coming back on Monday, but that's Labor Day, so I'm just going to crash into bed. And they're like, Katie, we know you have a long flight. It's not going to take you, like, a couple months.
Mm-hmm.
So I was like, oh, crap, wrong conference.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yep, wrong card. Oh, come on. You know, these wallets seem like such a great idea to actually...
Here's a question. I got a... for a discount at Tusk. Does this count? Then outside of the restaurant been having food off of the menu?
I have to check on that for you.
Okay. Well, I'll send it back, and if it doesn't work, then it doesn't work. That's
okay.
Fine. Because either way, it's okay.
Alrighty.
But if it does, then so much the better.
Yes. That's a plus. Thank you. You're going to need the pen, so you might
have to
keep
that.
Thank you. I'll be right back for you.
I would love to be able to go. It sounds like
yeah.
a lot of fun.
Especially, I'm doing more just personal stuff with Django. And I had a team that rebuilt an entire website on Django, but unfortunately I couldn't participate. I was running the project.
Yeah.
I didn't get any of the fun stuff.
Yeah, I'm going to be submitting a 508 tutorial for that. Hopefully. Now I have to. I've said it in the podcast.
For listeners who don't know, like myself... What is 508? What does that mean?
That is accessibility for webs to... That is to make... It's a federal mandate.
Okay.
That makes websites accessible to anybody in spite of their disability. So they should be able to use all the functionality and get all the data of the website, if at all possible. Of course, you're not like... My favorite troll question, because only trolls ask this. So, can I make my JavaScript port of Doom, 508 accessible? Yes, actually, you can. Now, it is acceptable that you are not going to make it accessible for a blind person. However, maybe you should think about colorblind people.
Mm-hmm.
This was a huge... Dungeons & Dreadmore had monsters. And they blended in against the background. And somebody who is colorblind... emailed the developers, and he's like, I can't see most of the monsters because the color scheme you chose.
Mm-hmm.
And the guy went and redid the art.
Awesome.
He chose a slightly different orange, and it was perfect. And he's like, okay, great, here we go. And there are ways to pick out palettes before you start that are, colorblind combined. You can also, if you have a Flash Port of Doom, doing things like adding an easy mode helps a lot for people that have motion disabilities or cognitive disabilities. Not everything you do has to have like the super duper hard level.
That's gotta be tricky because the 508 covers an awful lot.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, and to think about everything, especially depending on what you're doing. I mean, a game is probably radically different from say a book site or a review site.
It helps to start off understanding who it covers,
mm-hmm.
And knowing more about these people. It covers there's four basic groups. There's the visually disabled.
Mm-hmm.
There's the hearing disabled, there's the motor impaired, and there's cognitively disabled. Cognitively disabled people would be like people that have dyslexia or ADD or ADHD or, have any kind of like information processing disorder. People often list like, well, mentally retarded people shouldn't be on websites. And it's like, we're not talking about that. We're talking about people that might have issues processing information just normally.
Right.
So... And you understand that you don't have to comply with everything, but if it's impossible, really think about it before you say this is impossible, or is it impossible, or are you just lazy?
Sure.
No,
that's fair. It's just a different way to approach the problem.
It is.
And I know 508 gave some of the companies I worked for a real heartache,
mm-hmm.
because, they want that audience,
mm-hmm.
but are they willing to, is the return on the investment worth it?
Some of the return on investment, if you make your site 508 accessible,
mm-hmm.
I guarantee you your usability is going to increase for everyone.
That's a really good point.
Yeah. One thing I noticed on sites that are 508 compliant, it's easy to find your way around them because you have to have a consistent navigation throughout
mm-hmm.
the site. If you look at the Python documentation... Sphinx does this, and
mm-hmm.
I hate that Sphinx does this, and I'm going to find whoever just made this decision in Sphinx and, like, smack him or her, because their navigation is not consistent. It only shows you next and previous and siblings
mm-hmm.
And children. That's really bad. You need to have a consistent navigation, at least at the top. If you want to make the sign change, fine, but have something that shows you this is the overall structure of the site,
mm-hmm.
because if somebody has some kind of attention disorder, especially people that are dyslexic, often, we have a mental map in our head of where we are in a site. They don't have that. Their steps don't go back as far sometimes.
Wow.
So they can get lost in the site very easily.
Mm-hmm.
Anybody who has any kind of memory disorder will have the same issue. So just have a stupid navigation. I hate going to the Python docs because I'll Google and get into the middle of it. I'm like... Okay, well, I guess I have to step back out, and I have to keep stepping up to figure out where I am, which really annoys me. I just want to see the whole structure of the navigation, at least the top level. You don't need to do, like, huge navigation, but just the top level. People also don't like things like pinpoint precision.
Okay.
So, like, when you click a radio box,
mm-hmm.
you know how tiny they are. They're 10 by 10.
Use a damn label.
Yes. If you use a label, the whole thing is clickable.
Yep.
Everybody likes that. Everybody likes to have a tab order that makes sense.
Yes.
Having a tab order that makes sense on a form is huge. Or
Thanks,
being able
I
to show...
Really good for the restaurant.
No worries.
Thank you very much. I'll take this out of your way.
Oh, thank you.
before. I can't tell you how much I scream anytime I'm trying to fill out a form and I go to click on the text next to a checkbox or a radio button, and it doesn't work. It drives me up to the wall.
Yeah. And, you know, having, like, forms, I hate it when forms try to mimic paper and have everything side by side.
Oh, yeah. And you're in a different medium. Go with that.
Yeah. And if you do a proper 508 form, it goes down.
Right.
It just goes down because that's easier. It's easier for people to follow.
Sure.
I could
definitely see resuscitating. Having that kind of, talk, not only at GenioCon, but here as well. You know, it's just something that people don't consider very often.
Well, that's why I'm doing a poster on it.
Of course.
Because I actually wanted face-to-face time with people saying, but my website, I think mine isn't accessible. It's like, okay, show me your website.
Mm-hmm.
I can give you some tips right now that'll make it more accessible.
That's valuable stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I think we are coming up to the end of this, unfortunately. Everyone's moving on and we're settling up, but I wanted to thank you for being here with us. This was really great. And I'd actually like to have you on again to talk a little bit more about the usability and the 508 stuff especially.
Whenever you want.
Absolutely. Fantastic.
Yeah, thank you so much.
Thank you.
I'm glad we bumped into each other and talked about My Little Pony.
Yeah. Team Frolic Circle.
Like you.